Hey, y'all, and welcome to episode 27 of The Early Team. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Tamara Dotton, who has been a career software engineer working on complex systems. She is currently a lead engineer at Acre, a growing real estate tech startup, redefining how we buy and live in our homes, where she joined as employee number one. In this conversation, we talk about her experience working at large companies such as Raytheon and Red Hat, where she gained the expertise that empowered her work at early stage startups later on. How she has been able to level up at every stage while managing imposter syndrome as part of the process, and how she has been able to lead at Acre, both as employee number one and as an engineering leader. I enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that you do as well. Let's jump in. Welcome to Rob Conversations with Contributors at Early Stage Startups. Immersed in ambiguity and navigating the unknowns, we talk about how they figured it out or didn't. I'm your host, Shaheen Mossadegh-Zad, and this is The Early Team. This episode is brought to you by the Split Pay app, a seamless way to split a group bill. I personally use Split when going out with friends to pay for the items I ordered instead of splitting the check down the middle. It's easy to use. I simply take a photo of the bill, and then I'm able to allocate the items that I ordered, and then knowing how much I owe or someone owes me. It's easy to use. You simply snap, split, save. Check it out and download the app today at splitpayments.app. Tamara, welcome to The Early Team. I am very much looking forward to this conversation, talking about your rich background, but I will hold my excitement and to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you and how you've gotten to this point today.
Sounds good. And thanks so much for having me here, Shaheen. I love what you've put together with The Early Team and just think it's really helpful. So as mentioned, my name is Tamara and I am lead engineer at a company called Acre. And we are building in the space of home ownership and giving customers a better way to both buy and live in their home, which is something near and dear to my heart and that I'm really excited about. Yeah. So I've been working as a software engineer for 10 plus years, I would say, in industry. So started at some larger companies such as Raytheon and defense contracting, Red Hat, but ultimately found my footing in the startup world and have had a lot of great experiences there that I'm happy to continue at Acre.
Okay, wonderful. And if you don't mind, can you kind of set the picture for us in terms of how you ended up in software engineering, starting at a large company? What was that like for you? And then we can go from there.
Awesome. Sounds great. So for me, the road to software engineering. So in school, was always strong in math and sciences. Yeah. So gravitated towards that kind of path. My dad, as an engineer, just had a lot of influence from making me go to engineering camp one summer, even though I was kicking and screaming, but ultimately very grateful for it. But I really didn't take my first coding classes until college. So I went to the University of Virginia and as an engineering school student. And in our first year, we had to take intro courses from all of the different disciplines. And at that time, thought I was going to be an electrical engineer like my dad. And then took my first EE course and started to question that.
Not for me. Okay.
I was like, oh, actually. But I took my first coding class, my first CS course, and loved it. And it was maybe our final project. I had spent the whole night working on it in the computer lab, but left just really excited and everything in the morning and said, I kind of love this. So slowly transitioned more to that side of things.
Got it. And not to get too deep in the weed of things, but I'm curious in terms of
CS, computer science as a whole, and bringing the pieces of puzzle together, what aspects of it really click for you that you're like, this is it? Were there like frustrations with it, or just being able to solve a problem and then, you know, cheer on from there? What aspects of CS were like, this is what I want to do?
Yeah. For me, I love building things. I love kind of mapping it out and seeing how the pieces are going to fit together, seeing where things break and finding a way to fix that going forward. And so I think that's what really drew me in, that after delivering a project, there was something tangible that I could look back to and run and actually see it work and go from it breaking to it actually working. So that's what was great. And yeah, there are a lot of frustrations when something doesn't compile or isn't this working like I expected. But the satisfaction that you get at the end of that after, you know, really just putting everything into it and even collaborating with others and finding the optimal solution, that stuff was really energizing, which was awesome.
Nice. I love it. And as you graduate and you're looking at opportunities within the field, how did you decide on where you wanted to go? Was the idea of joining a larger company top of mind, or it's more like, I'm a recent grad, I'm going to find opportunities that best suit me at this point and then go that direction?
Yeah. So coming onto graduation, even though I loved computer science, I loved programming, I loved building and stuff, I don't think I really saw myself as, oh, I'm going to be a software engineer. This is the career I'm going to take on. And was still exploring different things. Yeah. One of my faculty advisors pushed me to go to the Grace Hopper conference that happens every 2 years for women in computing. And I think that was the missing piece for me of actually seeing women software engineers who are just fabulous and doing amazing things. And so a conference full of that was really what pushed me towards, okay, this is what I want my career to be and what I can actually do. And so at that point, in terms of company size or anything, didn't really factor too much. But for myself, knowing that I was moving back to the DC area, I grew up in Northern Virginia and everything, was really focused on what is the tech that's happening there. Startups weren't even on my radar, I would say. But that an opportunity came up with Raytheon to work as a software engineer and kind of just jumped.
Got it. And was your responsibility more so full stack? So you were working on front end and back end, or were you on one end or the other?
Yeah, it was more full stack, although I was working on unmanned air vehicles and stuff. So when it comes to the front end, it wasn't as flashy, shiny as some of the web applications that we're more used to. So working on full stack, and also in the first year with Raytheon, also jumped into a lot of QA roles, which a lot of engineers, early engineers might start there. And I do think that it provided a lot of value for me in my career to take on some of that, because you really take a perspective of how can this break? How can we make this more robust? And I think it also just forced me to see software applications as a whole, as opposed to just this one piece that I'm working on. Because when you have to QA it, you have to see how all the pieces actually come together and work. And I think that's been a big benefit.
I think personally, looking back and having to do quality assurance because maybe the resources weren't there and you're the only one, it really helps you even become more embedded with the product that you're building, and you know the ins and outs quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so you're talking, exactly. And you're talking about this experience. Were there other aspects of working at a larger company that help you build a foundation, whether it's processes, doing QA, things like that, and we'll get to your time at startups, but curious on what those foundationals were for you that really helped you later in your career.
Yeah, there definitely were a lot of processes being at a bigger company. I think access to mentors was a really big thing that I got out of working at larger companies. So at Raytheon, there was definitely another engineer, Isaac Ade, who really just taught me a lot in that first year working. And then as I transitioned into working at Red Hat, which was another big company, the team I was on, there was just a lot of people who were helpful in tapping me for certain projects or helping me to shape my career and teaching me a lot. So I think you get a lot of access to that in larger companies, which is really great. Okay. But also, yeah, process-wise, learning more about CI/CD and how we want to roll out pieces and stuff like that, I think you get a lot of that structure, which has been helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense. And before we transition to Red Hat and how that came about for you, you talked about mentorship. I'm curious, especially whether you're younger or older, how you have viewed mentorship, because it's such a vague term. What does that actually mean? What is the person doing? What things were you looking for or just happened to happen and you've learned from them from others who've been a mentor to you and then you've been a mentor to others?
Definitely. So what I found, at least in those early years, formal mentorships, like through a program, were helpful, but not really life-changing or anything.
Right.
I was assigned certain people to help me in the career, and it was great, but it didn't really make as much of an impact as some of those mentorships that came out organically. So that was really exciting. Just, you know, somebody who you would pass on the way to the cafeteria or somebody who you were on a project for. And I think what was really powerful for me with those mentors is that they saw something in me or a value that I brought to the project, to the team. And that just gives you so much confidence, especially when you're early on, especially when you might not look like a lot of people who are in tech or in that expected pedigree background. Yeah. And so having those moments really just provide so much value.
When you're thinking about potentially leaving and the Red Hat opportunity comes about, were there certain aspects of it that drew you? Is it more like, I want to explore newer things? Maybe my growth has hit a certain level, plateau that may not get here. How long were you at your initial role in company? And then what were the things that impacted you and influenced you to make a change?
Yeah, so I was at Raytheon for a little over a year. And it's defense contracting, so public sector moves a little slowly. So some of that
just a little bit.
Just a little. Yeah. So I've heard. Yeah. No, it moves a little slowly. Some of that first year was waiting on some of my security clearances. And at that time, you can't contribute to certain projects. So you're kind of on the bench and stuff. And so really wanted a faster pace of learning. And that's what drew me to Red Hat, where I ultimately joined. And got to jump both feet in and have a lot of growth and learnings at that company.
Yeah. Can you tell us what Red Hat's specialty is or the product or the things that they provide as a business? And then we can dive into the projects or things that you worked on.
Yeah. So most people familiar with Red Hat know it for open source. So they take a lot of open source projects and have a managed version of it where you can purchase licenses and everything. And yes, when I joined in their IT consulting arm. And so we worked with different organizations and helped them kind of build out their tech solutions, more focused for me in the middleware layer. So not purely front end or back end, but some of that orchestration that happens in between. And so my main project while I was there was a project called Positive Train Control. And this was pretty amazing. In essence, it was a project where it helped trains communicate to the tracks to help prevent collisions. And so it was the stakes were a little high, but
I was about to say,
When I got to join, it was when that project initially started. So we were just ramping up. So they got about 30 of us together. We were working with some of the other third parties in that space, some of the railroads directly. And so it really was from like inception and design and architecture through building, through testing, through rollout, and some of that maintenance, got to see all of those life cycles of that project. And yeah, that's exactly the exposure that I wanted and needed in my career at that point.
How long of a project was that, say, from the inception to where live things are working well and the project, say, has concluded?
Yeah, I would say I was on, and that project is still going today, so it's long running, but I was on that project for about 3 years. And so, as I mentioned, when I started, we, you know, there was a quick proof of concept that was done, but we were implementing the V1.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started there. And then by the time I left, I had rolled on to some projects where we were integrating it with some of the railroads. So I led the integration at Kansas City Southern. And so, yeah, it was rollout phase and pretty amazing to see all that we were able to do in that.
Right. Can you walk us through this 0-1 idea, getting that first version out and working with something that's in the physical world? And tying it in, you're working with external teams. There are many people on the team itself. What aspects of the project did you have to then integrate with? What challenges did you run into? And we going back to like solving a problem, things like that. What was the process like for you?
Yeah. So I think before you have something built out and in that inception phase, like there's a lot of hypothetical problems that you're trying to solve. So I think that's a very interesting space to be in, because you're trying to think, oh, but what if this happens, or how can we optimize this? So speed was a big thing for us, which is why the project was mostly built out C++ and everything. So performance and everything. And then the requirements around uptime. So it was 5 nines, I believe. So, how can we make sure things don't go down, the redundancy? Even technology choice, we were building around merge messaging, which was, again, a middleware software, but still a little nascent. And so it was really awesome to see that as we were running into challenges, we would be able to factor those back into that technology itself and contribute back, which was really cool to see. And so some of that exposure to how open source works and builds and grows was pretty amazing. I think what's funny is, as much as you're trying to think ahead to all of that can come up, there's still stuff that kind of blindsides you and that you have to react to. So we were building out all these components and everything. And then for a given railroad, they would have to put it inside their network and kind of design their own topology. So it was made to be very modular and plug and play. And then as we kind of got to that point, we hit a kind of reckoning with like, how are they going to design or build out their topologies to roll it up? Yeah. And so from that, we actually had to work on and build up a deployment tool. And so that was really exciting, because I was one of the engineers who got to jump onto that work and kind of visual layer that we made to help them kind of piece it all together. And then some actual technical trainings that went with that so that they can start to roll that out. And that was really great to get exposure to that process.
Okay. Three questions for you out of that. One, let's start out. How do you do quality assurance on something like this where the impact could be detrimental? So you're working with trains, which is the end product there. How do you go about testing things out, especially when you're building something from scratch?
Yeah.
Before you roll it out.
Great question. Something we had to do a lot of learnings on. I think, so testing and QA was a big part of that. We actually had a pretty large, and got to work closely like an automated QA team. And so some of the systems they were building. So I think a few things. One, just taking, or really the emphasis on integration testing. Obviously in software, there's a lot of layers or levels at which you can test. And there are the unit tests and component tests and stuff. But I think a lot of the value comes out of when you get it end-to-end pieced together. And again, that's that like higher level perspective on software systems as a whole.
Yeah.
So I think that was really valuable. I think the other thing is making sure you're testing from the end users or business users' perspective. Yeah. So with some of our testing, we actually wrote a lot of our scripts in at the time is very popular, cucumber. And so it's almost like a plain language way of kind of expressing your tests. And the goal is that more business users can help to write tests. Doesn't always happen. Yeah. Even if they don't write them, they could more or less read them and understand that. And I think that's a big thing, because as engineers, we kind of get focused into the guts of how things work. Yeah. But to take that higher level perspective end to end and see, oh, okay, this railroad cares about this piece of the functionality and seeing it from their perspective. I think that's important with testing.
Got it. And that's a great leeway to my second question then, is when you are translating the technical side to the business side, or you're having these trainings for various individuals who may not been part of the initial build, what are certain things that you have found that helps bridge that kind of communication, where it's easier or it's clearer to communicate the technical side to the business side? And one that always comes up for me is, like, how do you explain technical debt, for example, to someone that, say, it's on the business side and it's like, I have, like, how do you have technical debt? What does that even mean? So I'm curious to hear how you approach things like.
Yeah, definitely something that always learning and trying to get better at. I think one of the big things, and especially as we worked on that technical training piece that I got to lead at some of the railroads, first understanding what is their value system, or what's important to them that they're coming to, or what are their priorities, what are their goals and objectives, and then framing any technical piece, such as like technical debt and stuff like that, in a way that relates back to what their goals are. Yeah. So yeah, the concept of technical debt, really hard to explain outside of engineers, but outside of engineering, people understand stuff can slow you down for building. So if there's a lot of tech debt because, you know, messy architecture or maintenance or things breaking and more bugs, like you could really quantify in a number of days that this slows us down, or resources that need to be spent to fix things.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of band-aid together. So I think understanding what their goals are and translating it in a way that maps back to their goals is a big win. And I think also the other thing is understanding their ecosystem and tool sets and what works for them, and then building in a way that keep them in their ecosystem. So if they're used to using certain technology or software systems and stuff, really tying it back to that. And I always feel like a visual approach or visual learning really, really helps outside of engineering. Yeah.
You mentioned taking the lead on this initiative and being part of it. How did that decision come about in terms of you taking the lead? What went through your head being, you know, earlier, say, someone else who may have a lot of experience at this point? Were there anything going on, or was it more like, no, I want to do this, and you raised your hand for it?
Yeah, it was very not the me raise my hand for it. So I think this is another place where mentorship just played a really key role in my career, and informal mentorship. So there was an engineer on the team, Michael Smith, who worked really closely with, and he was just a wealth of knowledge and how, and he thought about things and really took leadership on this project as a whole. And initially he was going to be leading some of these technical trainings and putting together, and we worked together on that deployment tool for this system. And so why we were closest to how to kind of lead some of these. And ultimately he took a job with Amazon, so was leaving and tapped me as someone to take over for that initiative and put together. And yeah, at first I was a little intimidated, but his vote of confidence in me really meant a lot throughout the project and in this moment itself. So that was really encouraging. And so when I started, I think the big thing I wanted to see is, how can I shape this? Understanding the goals, understanding what we want to get out of it, how can I help to shape this? And this is where I put together some of those kind of plug and play visual components that help to make it easier for right. some of the engineers and folks and partners at our railroads to kind of transition and start rolling this out in their businesses.
Got it. Okay. And you talked about being on the project for 3 years. What was your growth like during those 3 years? What areas did you solidify for yourself? And as your time came to a close, what was on your mind on what's next?
Yeah, so the areas where I grew, I think one, just technical knowledge, getting to be exposed to all of those phases of the project. Two, leadership capacity. Again, ending those 3 years, leading some of the integrations at railroads and leading the technical training and my role in the deployment tool. I think the biggest thing was confidence, though, and knowing that, you know, this is a space where I belong and add value. Still early-ish in my career and still trying to figure that out. And there's a lot of, or I think in terms of the imposter syndrome or just knowing, do I bring value here? Do I belong? I think that's something a lot of people in general struggle with early in their career, but especially I would say women in tech, Black women in tech, it's an uphill battle. And so I think on that project, what it solidified for me is that, you know, I belong, I bring value here, and I can lean into my confidence a bit more. Yeah. So those are the main things I learned. And then as I transitioned off of that project and into some other ones at Red Hat, I think what became clear to me is that we really had something special on that team and in just like the late nights that we had to do, the like tight deadlines, the, you know, overcoming hurdles, it just brought us together. The leadership really created a great culture there. And unfortunately, I didn't have that same feeling on some of the other projects.
Yeah.
And so that's what made me start to think about, you know, what changes do I want to make there?
Yeah. And what changes did you then make after that?
Yeah. So I think that's, working on pieces of that project exposed me to Ruby on Rails and getting to work more on that. And at the time, up and coming technology there and how it really allowed you to quickly like build up web applications and your own projects and stuff. So I really started to get more into that. And so there was both that, like following the technology, seeing what people were building with Rails and starting my own side projects. But then also getting the exposure to at the different railroads to kind of see how integrating technology helps to solve their problems and their needs. That made me want to be closer to the customer, to the problem solving, and got me thinking more about the startup space. But yeah, so when I left Red Hat, it was initially to work on some of my own projects and building there. Yeah, so it was a great learning experience. But then ultimately, when I went back to full time, I knew I had a strong hunch I wanted to be at a startup. I wanted to be at an early team where I could have an outsized impact.
And as you made the transition, working on your side projects and then eventually moving to startups, was there a particular company that drew your attention? You're like, this is an interesting space I want to work on, or is it more like I just want to get that experience because I know ultimately it will help me maybe start my own thing again in the future, or it's just I want to be part of a startup because the impact is higher?
Yeah, it was primarily I want to be part of a startup. I think, or at that time, I was still in Washington, D.C., so the D.C. startup tech scene is smaller than other places. So fewer options, but was still exciting to see what people were building. And the one that drew me in was a company called Venga, which was building a CRM system for larger restaurant groups. And I think the thing that caught my eye for them, one, the team and the culture that they had, but two, when I was working on some of my own projects, I was working on some CRM platforms more for fashion companies. And so the CRM tie-in helped me kind of hone in on Venga and what they were building there and ultimately made me want to join.
How big was Venga when you joined roughly as a startup?
Yeah, so it wasn't necessarily early timeline-wise for Venga,
Right.
but it was still a very small team. So when I joined,
Yeah.
honestly, there were about 12, 15 people total on the team.
Okay.
And
Small team, all right.
small team, and engineering-wise, there were three of us, or I joined and it was three of us on the engineering team that
Yeah.
we were building. So that was really exciting and a great lesson for me in doing more with less. Even though we
Yeah.
weren't a big team, and even by the time we were acquired and everything, we weren't a huge team, but we were able to do so much with the resources we have, which I think is
Right.
especially great lesson seeing how things are today in the tech climate and everything. I think a lot of teams are having to learn that. So glad I got that lesson at that point.
Yeah, being resourceful is definitely a high quality to have. You've gone from a large company to another, have dabbled into your own projects, getting them off the ground. Now you're part of the smaller team with three engineers. What components or learnings from these larger companies translated well for you joining this startup versus what were some things that you had to unlearn to then be able to adapt to a much, much smaller team with less resources?
Yeah, great question. So I think when I joined and started working on certain things, some of my colleagues or they noticed some of the process that I brought to things, like, where's the documentation on this? Or
Yeah.
the testing experience that I had had at Red Hat and like the automated testing we had and just the layers of testing, we did not have that at Venga. Especially when I started early. So that gave me a little anxiety that, my first PR, I'm just kind of pushing. Just, where are the tests
Let's go
around this?
live. Yeah.
Exactly. So worked for the most part, but so that was something that I was able to bring with me to Venga. And ultimately, we were able to, find the time to build up some more of that process and structure, testing, all of that. So that was great. I think something I had to unlearn is some of that kind of asking for permission or getting handed a task and this is what we want you to do and this is the goal and how to accomplish it. And small team startup world, that's not always the case. Sometimes you have to see something and say, hey, I think we need to build around X and advocate for that initiative and push on that and get others to buy into that. Which is exciting, but can be a little intimidating, especially if you're not sure, is this the right call? Should this be the priority? So that was a challenge.
Earlier, we talked about imposter syndrome, and I think bringing that back in when you now have to make decisions or you have to advocate for certain things, coupling that with you being the point person, was this an easier transition for you, or did it take some steps to then eventually feel good about the process and be like, no, I got this, I can figure it out, and I can go out.
Yeah, definitely took some steps to be confident about that. And I think, yeah, imposter syndrome isn't something you just figure out in your first couple of years and then
Right.
you're good. It's cyclical,
Yeah.
Sometimes you build that confidence, you build that confidence, and then maybe you take a hit, maybe you make the wrong call on something, or something breaks, or you didn't see this thing potentially happening, and it kind of takes you back to that point of feeling very vulnerable, feeling intimidated and stuff. So you have to kind of keep working on it. So yeah, it was definitely a step-by-step process for me.
I haven't heard of it in terms of imposter syndrome being cyclical, and I really love that because it makes so much more sense. It's not something that just goes away. As you progress, other things come your way that you haven't done before. You feel it, you get acclimated, it comes again. Okay. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Kind of blew my mind on this side. All
I'm glad.
right.
I'm glad. Yeah, it was something I had to learn too. It's like, oh, I
Yeah.
thought I beat this already. So
So it's
yeah.
not just me. Okay,
Yeah.
glad that I'm not the only one.
Exactly. But I think what made a really huge difference for me and what I'll forever be grateful for is for at Venga, the trust that we put into each other and coworkers, and that my boss, CTO Sean, he seeing that he genuinely trusted me with certain things to just, run with it. Or take the lead on it, or speak up in this meeting. And, you know, that goes a long way into making you feel like you belong and wanting to just contribute back more and more and to help, you know, level up the company as a whole. And yeah, it wasn't just Sean. I would say all my teammates at Benga, from the co-founders, just really instilled that kind of culture, which was amazing to grow in.
I wish you could shout that from the rooftops. I think the word trust gets thrown around as a value, and then we have this and that. But being able to walk the talk is huge, because when you have that trust aspect, like you mentioned, people want to go further because, like, I'm part of it. Versus, yes. I've been on both sides of the spectrum, where on one side, it's like, okay, if I don't have the trust from you, then I'm going to do it the way you want to do things. That slows things down. I don't want to do it, or like things get in the way. It slows things down. And it can be not a fun process.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
At Venga, you're a small team. You mentioned being acquired, and we'll get to that. Going from a large company to now a much smaller, intimate team that trusts each other, what was that like for you? What were certain things that you weren't expecting from working at such a small company that came apparent when you joined, let's say, the first 3 months?
Yeah, stuff that was unexpected. Well, I mentioned some of the kind of lack of process that I was a little intimidated at first.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, I had mentioned wanting to join startup world because you get closer to the problem, closer to the customer. But I guess I didn't realize how close I would be able to get to that. At one point in our office and very open office space and everything, like, I'm sitting next to the CEO and I'm hearing what he's talking about and his concerns and just really seeing how he's shaping some of the things with the company. So you're really in it, whether it's informal meetings or just informally, because you're sitting next to each other. And as I'm working on maybe a UI design or something, he's able to like just scoot over and see it. And that quick feedback, that was really, really awesome to get to experience. Yeah. And talking about being close to the problem, being close to the customer, we even had a offsite in New Orleans where we did a little bit of a scavenger hunt. And one of the items was to find one of our clients, one of our restaurant groups, and go to the restaurant and ask them to pull up one of the reports that we did for them, and kind of getting to see them do that process. And it was really just cool to see it in their hands and something very tangible there. So. It's what I wanted, but I got even more of it than I anticipated it coming into to startup culture.
That makes sense. And as the team is growing, when the discussion of, hey, we're about to be acquired, how big was the team? And then on a personal level, how are you feeling about it? At certain times, getting acquired can be a great thing, but sometimes it can also come with a sort of a detachment. Like, you worked on something so much and now someone else is taking over. What was going through your head as the initial talks of getting acquired take?
Yeah. Well, I think the leadership, the co-founders, and played it close to their vest. The talks around being acquired were happening. So there wasn't a long lead up where we were preparing to be acquired and getting ready for it. But in general, just as the team was growing and building and at that time had over doubled in size from when I initially joined, so still relatively small. But I think just seeing all that we had been able to build and take on that we were growing, more of that structure that was in place, more focus on culture and employee happiness and developing people. We were taking on more junior employees and really helping to shape their career. I think that was really exciting. And honestly, when the news broke that Booking Holdings Open Table Family was acquiring us, one, it was huge validation because as a CRM, we were working with a lot of Open Table data and kind of piecing it together in a way that Open Table hadn't for their customers. Yeah. So it was just the validation that, you know, what we were doing really was needed and we were the team to do it. And for Open Table Booking Holdings, it made more sense to bring us into the fold and make us part of their larger product there. And honestly, it was just kind of celebration.
That's awesome.
I think with startups, you know, knowing what is that end state or what is that goal that's in mind, and to build a great culture and ultimately to see the fruits of your labor is really exciting.
Love it. I want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about Acre and your experience there. But before we get there, can you help us understand what happened next and the transitions that took place before you ended up at Acre?
Yeah, so what happened next? So it was, again, a lot of excitement going into it with the acquisition. As we were, so we were acquired 2019. So we were able to kind of stay as is. We were still in our own building, our own team, working together and stuff. As we started to get incorporated more and more into OpenTable as a company, and ultimately retired the Venga name and we became OpenTable CRM. I think that's when you start to see the, you know, some of the bonds kind of, it didn't feel the same closeness, the same tight working relationships that we used to have. Yeah. For myself, some of my initial projects at OpenTable, just saw that going back to a much larger company and the buy-in you have to get from all the different stakeholders before you can move forward on things, it wasn't that fast pace that I had experienced at Venga. And then the pandemic hit, which was really the big one.
Yeah.
At that point, Booking Holdings, OpenTable, like all of hospitality was hit. And so we saw layoffs and everything. So that was a really big impact there. And so for me, I even once we were acquired, even though it was exciting, I kind of had in the back of my mind, I do want to go back to the startup space, some of my own projects and stuff. But it was growing, but ultimately knew it was the end of Venga as we knew it.
Speaking about Acre and joining the company, where did that conversation start? How did you find them? And then what led to ultimately wanting to give it a go and join that early as employee number one?
Definitely. So after OpenTable, again, started to work on some of my own projects initially. Right. And Sam Pilaro, who was the CEO at Venga, ultimately became a really helpful mentor for me as I made that transition, and recommended me to a community called On Deck, where we met, where we connected.
Right.
And I think, super valuable there. So I was working with a co-founder at that time, and we had a beta out for some projects that were focused on online communities, and ultimately it just didn't pan out. So I had to take a step back and see what are the problem spaces that I really care about and I'm passionate about enough to take that dive, because startups are a lot of work. You're putting so much into it. So is it worth it, you know, what you're building for? And that's where I started to look at home ownership, that space more. Yeah. And specifically just seeing how access to home ownership has played such a huge role in the wealth gap here in the US. And just exploring that space and, you know, who has access, who doesn't, really just made me want to double down and build in there. So at that time, I was starting to think on, okay, what can I lead and build? Again, that taking my own projects approach. And it was in talking with Sam that he mentioned, you know, see who else is building in this space, see what they're doing, you know, just to see if there's any synergy there. And I did take that to heart and started meeting people, connecting through different connections I had made in On Deck, and then through just reaching out to people on Twitter and everything. And that just started to snowball, and ultimately connected with Drew Myers, who was leading a group community in prop tech. And he introduced me to the team at Acre. And at that point, it was just the co-founders. And when I heard what they were building and their approach to improving the future of home ownership, it just really connected to me. And seeing their connection, this wasn't, a few of them had worked together on previous startups, had had successful exits. So even though I was talking to a few different teams, this one really just connected to me the most.
Yeah.
One of the co-founders, Irene, just an amazing woman in tech. And so getting to work closely with her and learn from her it was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah. Now that you've been at Acre for some time, how has the team changed? How have your responsibility changed? I'm imagining being the first employee, you're not only building and coding, you're doing other things as well. How are things been for you as the company has gone from, say, the first employee to where y'all are now?
Yeah, so where we are today, we're just shy of 20 employees. So the team has grown a lot.
That is impressive.
That is, and especially during this time. So obviously, it's a tough time in tech in general, as we hear about all the layoffs and all of the challenges raising and all of that. But also the home market here in the U.S. has taken a really big hit. So being able to grow in that climate, and you know, it's impacted us and has shifted certain priorities, goals, product lines. We have had to respond to a lot of that. So a lot more of kind of adapting to some of the macro environment that I did not anticipate when I joined about a year ago. So that's been eye-opening and a lot of learnings, a lot of struggles through that, but very excited and hopeful seeing just how much stronger we're going to be building through this climate and getting to the other side. In terms of my role specifically, joined as employee number one. So building totally greenfield takes me back to some of those Red Hat days when we started the positive train control project. It's like, no code, you know, and you know, where do we go from there? So learning to kind of manage the different priorities and finding a way to iteratively kind of attack those and get out our V1 and have it answer some of those questions that we still have. All of that has been exciting and helping to shape the engineering team, which we're now a team of four. So still pretty small, but excited about the foundation that we're helping to build.
Yeah. And as you're talking about the team growing, are you as a lead managing the others as well? Or is it more rolling up to one person, say the CTO, for example?
Yeah. So we're still fairly flat, but definitely from, you know, one-on-ones with teammates and managing some of the workload and what we tackle next and breaking those down has been something I've had in my capacity. And then also helping to mentor some of my colleagues and stuff, one of which who I worked before previously at Red Hat. So it was really exciting to bring him over to Acre as well. And then as a team, as a product design and engineering team, we roll up into my director, Irene, who is one of the co-founders, and she's leading on product design and engineering.
Wonderful. For folks that don't work in the space and, you know, the only thing they're seeing is the rates going up or the macroeconomics changing, from your perspective, what are one or two things that may not be obvious within the space that it would be helpful for others to know as they're navigating through this tough time? Or any key learnings?
Yeah. I think one of the key learnings and what attracted me to this space is just how much room there is to solve really hard problems that connect to our everyday life. There are like the whole way we've been buying homes, the 30-year mortgage, you know, has been decades upon decades and hasn't changed, although our world has changed so much and our needs and the way we live in our homes has changed drastically. It's just kind of interesting for me to see that this space, and even just looking at, you know, what technology is available through different APIs and stuff, and just how, compared to some other spaces where I've been, how behind it feels on some of it. So that's frustrating sometimes, but very exciting because there's a lot of improvements and a lot of innovation, I think, to come in here. So I think that was an eye opener for me going from an outsider who's felt some of the struggles around home ownership to being somebody who's in this space and building.
Love that. Thank you. Okay, Tamara, let's bring it home with last few questions for you. One, looking back at working at early stage startups, grinding things out, were there any negative consequences, let's say, to your mental health, feeling burnt out, anything that comes with being in this territory?
Yeah, I would say burnout is a big one. And with that, learning what is a pace that works for me. And learning to how to honor when, you know, hey, I'm low energy right now. I'm not solving anything in this state of mind or, you know, however I'm feeling, and knowing that, you know, taking the time to rest and recover will provide me more value to get back out there tomorrow or to get back up in the morning and really, you know, hone in on something that I'm trying to attack and solve. And I think that's, I think with startups, you get the like, work hard. And I've had those, you know, overnights in the office. We're ordering dinner. Somebody's getting a hotel nearby because, you know, we're grinding and working on it. And honestly, sometimes that feels great. But then sometimes when I'm noticing this is not giving me the energy to sustain, that's where I realize, you know what, I need to take a step back, and not feeling like communicating that to either my lead or my teammates is a sign of weakness, and recognizing that this is what helps you going for the long run. So I think that's definitely a big one.
Got it. On that same note, looking at things from a high level, how has the experience for you been as a woman of color working in tech, especially a field that is heavily skewed in one demographic direction?
Yeah, that's been kind of a perennial struggle, I would say, because of how it plays into, as we've talked about, imposter syndrome and just, you know, second guessing, do I belong here? I would say I've been very fortunate and blessed that some of the really toxic situations that I've, as I've talked to other people, other women of color in tech, what they've experienced, I've been really fortunate that I haven't had as acute of issues as they have. But you get, you know, the microaggressions, or you get the, you know, second guessing. I remember at Raytheon, I was working on a SCIF, so a secured area, and, you know, somebody passing by like flagged me down, kind of, you know, what are you doing here? How did you get in here? And it's like, so you deal with those. And yes, exactly. And I think what the brain cycle spent on navigating some of that and understanding it and saying, well, why did they say that to me? Is it because of who I am? Or was it because of the work? Or was it, you know, what was the motivation there? Should I take this more seriously than I should? Like, all of that, honestly, takes from the ability to build and to focus on work and development. So that's just such a struggle, and something that I've had to work on and balance and at least recognize, like, hey, I can go down this rabbit hole of like second guessing, or I can get to the work at hand. And, you know, there's never a right answer, but just knowing what that trade-off looks like for myself. But I've been really encouraged to see how, over the years, I'm really hopeful that things are changing. I've gone to work with a lot of other women of color who are starting their careers in tech or who are building some of their own companies, and just seeing the support system around that there is now is just very, very encouraging. And I know that in 5-10 years, things are going to look very different in tech than they did now and even when I started.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And so for my last major question for you, looking back at your career, what are some things that you have learned about yourself?
Yeah, I think one big thing I've learned about myself looking back at my career is, one thing that I've learned is there's a lot of strength in empathy. And I've always taken that as such a soft skill that, you know, take for granted that, you know, I have, and it's, you know, come up in my strengths finders and all those kind of personality quizzes. And I've always downplayed it, like, no, I want analytical and leadership and stuff.
Right.
But I've just realized how much that's helped me to connect to my coworkers, how that's helped me to connect to the problem that we're solving and the customers and their pain points. And it's really, I now have come to see it more as an asset than, you know, just something that I've always kind of had.
Okay. Last quick questions for you. First, fill in the blank for me. Working at an early stage startup is?
Is impactful. Your value you provide and what you build is tangible. You can see it. You can measure it. It's there's no better feeling than that at the end of the day.
Love it. Also, looking back at your career, who are one or two individuals that have been influential in your career that you like to give a shout out to?
Yeah, so I've mentioned a few, and it's really hard to boil it down to just one or two. But I would really say Mike Smith, who was a colleague of mine at Red Hat, and again, was one of those first coworkers to see the value that I provide and kind of tap me for certain opportunities that just really helped shape my career in a huge way. And so grateful to him. And then I would say kind of a combination of the co-founders at Venga, Sam Pilaro and Winston Lord. They really just created such great culture and environment in which to learn and grow that I'm forever grateful to. And still in touch with them. And Sam has been a great mentor for me. And I would echo with that Sean Carpenter, who was the CTO, and his leadership, his, as I mentioned before, trust in me and genuinely, you know, valuing the contributions that I brought to the team were just amazing.
Wonderful. Last question. If you weren't in tech or computer science, what would you do? What would you explore?
Yeah, this is a tough one because I've only known really tech. I would say if I weren't in tech, probably working with children, especially in communities that are under-resourced or under-invested in. Just a lot of the value system that I got to experience as a child really helped me in my life, and just recognizing, you know, how uneven opportunities are. And so being able to bring those to others at an earlier stage in life is just really a huge win, I would think.
Great. Tamara, this has been such a fun conversation. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your experience and being vulnerable, and excited to share this out with the community.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for the opportunity.